Welcome back. I think we're at episode 249. Joe, how you doing?
Just fine, Tim. Good to hear your voice.
Well, interesting week, sort of a continuation from last week as this sort of how the politics unfolded on this, the question of the Supreme Court leak and the matter of abortion. The Department of Justice is apparently encouraging mob rule, not doing anything in to enforce the law. I think there was an appeal made by the Republicans in the Congress. He's not prosecuting or going after demonstrators who are protesting outside the justices' homes, which is a direct violation of federal law. Nearly 50 House Republicans pressed Attorney General Merrick Garland Wednesday to prosecute those protesting outside the homes of Supreme Court justices over an anticipated ruling overturning Roe v. Wade. Now, mind you, this is a leak. It's an anticipated ruling. So they're protesting something that really hasn't even happened yet. Led by Representative Claudia Tenney, she's a Republican from New York. Members of Congress cite federal law that makes it illegal to picket or parade outside a courthouse or a judge's home with the intent of influencing the discharge of his duty. We therefore ask a simple question: as Supreme Court justices are being illegally targeted at their homes, do you intend to enforce the law? The Republican wrote, "Your failure to act is a shameless and implicit endorsement of mob rule in America." They joined a chorus of voices, including Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and Judiciary Committee Banking Member Chuck Grassley, who are condemning the protests at the justices' homes. Mind you, this is the same Attorney General and Justice Department that is going after the January 6th protesters, calling them insurrectionists. I guess I don't know if Merrick Garland can take time away from, you know, hunting Nazis and white nationalists or supremacists and white terrorists to go after these people who are breaking the law. The Jen Psaki, the outgoing, I guess she is gone now, the spokes lady for the White House, appeared to endorse the protest, calling it peaceful, either unaware or not caring about the law that actually prohibits such actions. So it seems to be, it's kind of, again, it's a rule for thee, not for me, right? Going on here, double standard. Are we surprised?
Tim?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Something happened.
Okay.
We're back now.
Were you able to hear me?
I was able to hear you up to a certain point, and then it just went gazik.
Oh, where did we cut off?
You cut off right where you're talking about Merrick Garland's, the difference between the January 6th.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would just make the point that, of course, Merrick Garland apparently is not willing to prosecute these demonstrators who are in violation of a specific federal law. And of course, his Justice Department has viciously gone after January 6th protesters, calling him insurrectionist. I guess it's he's too busy chasing white supremacist terrorist groups to actually enforce the law. Is that
the terrible threat to freedom and the economy, you know, presented by the white supremacists? Are there any white supremacists, in fact? I mean, I know there are a couple militia groups that are usually infiltrated like 50% by FBI agents.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's a few of those, but the idea of white supremacy as a rallying cry doesn't seem to be really, you know, being either given or heard by many people. It's just used at this point 100% as a way to intimidate Europeans into accepting what is basically a second-class citizenship, right? Because, I mean, if you look at the, you know, the demographics of the two protests, right? The one in 1-6 and then the one that's going on outside the justices' homes, you can see that you don't have many white males protesting outside the justices' homes, right? Very few, but there was quite a few in the 1-6. So, you know, Merrick Garland is just, you know, giving a not so subtle clue as to the new overt stratification. I think the stratification of particularly white males being second class has actually gone on subvertly for decades, but now it's getting just right in the face because, well, for a number of reasons, but hopefully we are at diminishing returns. I mean, I had a conversation with a couple guys about this very thing earlier in the week, and I was surprised at how clear-minded they were. And these aren't political types. They have no reason to really study the issue. They just, at this point, kind of intuitively knew that the media's presentation would be as a way to intimidate Europeans. And that was really what was in back of mainstream media's, you know, the way that they shaped the news, that it was propaganda. So small sample size, but very heartening to me.
Now, yeah, with this, I mean, obviously you see double standard, cite the protests of the summer of 2020, causing billions of dollars of damage, mostly peaceful, justified, media largely justified the rioting and the looting, calling them protests, applying a political motivation to the participants, the FBI and the Justice Department sort of winking and nodding at Antifa. And that was even during the Trump presidency. What's interesting is this, we have an anticipated ruling, a leaked draft of an opinion. The opinion, if does become a decision at the end of June, announced, would simply, when overturning of Roe and Casey versus Planned Parenthood in the, what it would simply do is change the jurisdiction of the abortion matter. It's not a moral statement of abortion. It doesn't state anything about the issue itself. It simply acknowledges the proper jurisdiction of the issue. It does nothing to change abortion laws at all, actually. It simply just returns it to the states. And so this act of outrage and protesting, obviously it's a hysterical and also sort of a chaotic response. I think a planned chaotic response, because the reason why the whole thing was leaked was to give a justification for protest. Already we hear talk of in the media, protests, numbering into thousands, whatever that means, hear headline like that, protesting abortion rights or protesting to protect reproductive freedom, as they call it, but there's never, again, that hasn't been a decision yet. And of course, if the decision does come down as anticipated, it simply hands it back to the states, and all that energy could be diverted to the state, to legislative efforts in the states. And I imagine those states where most of those people are outraged, the blue states, are going to maintain their infanticide laws, unfortunately. So why protest other than create an environment of chaos? It's sort of like, again, they affect the politics. They never want to give us a dull moment. They want to always create a crisis atmosphere. And I just find it hard to believe that there's going to be an organic nationwide movement protesting for the right to kill unborn children. It's always sort of astroturf anyway. These things, these organizations are bought and paid for by various NGOs and foundations. I'm sure that George Soros is behind it. This organization Ruth sent us is a recipient, I think, of George Soros, indirectly of George Soros, Open Society largesse. And these are sort of renter crowds. They're paid to protest. And of course, when they're breaking the laws, if you had a government which had a Justice Department that was interested in enforcing the law and doing its duty to protect the Constitution, it could go after these organizations and even go after some of these foundations, charge them with racketeering. The same way they went after the pro-life movement in the 80s and 90s, applying RICO laws to like Operation Rescue to shut down that movement, because again, the pro-life movement didn't have the favor of the oligarchs or the establishment, whereas the pro-abortion movement does. So the same rules don't apply. So there are some protests that are more equal than others. You really can't act like a civil rights movement and engage in civil disobedience and protest outside of clinics and sit down protest and expect to get the same favorable press. So that you're simply not going to get it. But nevertheless, again, these organizations, if they wanted to, they could investigate, where the funding comes from. They're breaking the law. You could charge them with racketeering, call them insurrectionists because they're obstructing a governmental, the same way they went after January 6th protesters, claiming they were disrupting a constitutional process. Well, what's a judicial proceeding, especially a matter of constitutional law? It's a constitutional process, and they're disrupting it, and they're just letting it happen. And you know, they want this sort of everyone is talking about outrage. You want this protest, and they want the chaos, they want the violence, hopefully, over the summer. Again, I don't know if there's any real impetus or motivation to really cause violence over this issue. When it's simply reverting the jurisdiction to where it once was, which is the states. And you can do it all that energy, and there's legislative efforts in the various states. You get a lot more bang for your buck on both sides. If this was the other way around, the Supreme Court was going to uphold Roe v. Wade. Let's say they get intimidated, uphold Roe v. Wade. You're not going to get pro-life protesters claiming outrage, going at protesting outside the justices' homes. And if they did, Merrick Garland would come down them like a hammer and call them insurrectionists.
I think the timing of it indicates it's a pseudo event. I would compare it to the George Floyd murder by police. Now, I thought that was a pseudo event. And I thought, in other words, it was artificial. If you look at the actual beginning of the riots, they're not organic. There's some guy in a black outfit with a device that he had to break windows walking along underneath his umbrella. You know, it's a Masonic, mm-hmm. Indicator. And then to that, you add basically there are groups that are funded whose job is to riot, and you put that into the mix. And then I think they sweep up some street people, and the media, fans the flame. And then suddenly it looks like, there's some kind of popular movement going on, when in fact it's just, the situationists that are there, being paid probably by Soros to be, visible and to lead the parade. We talked about the actual public energy that existed in the autonomous zones. Mm-hmm. And I had talked to the individual who lived there, and he walked through the zones with his iPhone showing it to me, and there was nothing there. It was just fentanyl people face down on the sidewalk. They were trying to organize a protest. It was ironic when he went by and they couldn't even get 10 people. I just don't think that the two real great emotional stimulus of the mob that we have in the United States are Roe as one, and the other would be police on black violence, right? These two for the left are just the linchpins, right? These are just ideal. So you kind of expected that that the Roe decision would occur now, because it just seemed that this would be the riot du jour rationale. And if you look at like George Floyd, I mean, this was to distract from the lockdowns, right? You couldn't mm-hmm. really organize white or European protests against being locked down while in this mass chaos, right? So this was why the timing of it was such. So, in our world, Tim, it's like the flow of the attack goes from, the COVID is the justification for the lockdowns, which then becomes the rationale for the vaccines. And now that then becomes the structure under which, the shortages come forward because of the Ukrainian war, the quagmire. But if you strip away the political facades and distractions, what you have is a pretty straight line to genocide. There really isn't, it's not particularly hard to see. It's just, there's a series of distractions, one after another. I mean, the lockdowns giving way to the vaccines, which gave way almost miraculously to the Ukrainian situation, which then became suddenly the shortages. And now you have an incremental, shortages phenomena that is developing. I mean, yesterday India said they weren't going to export wheat any longer, right? No more wheat exports, which is catastrophic to a number of countries around India, and indicates, you know, that they are that they're also having shortages, which probably have to do with the fact that there is this fertilizer shortage, which has to do with the artificial lockdown of all the shipping that's going on. You know, baby formula in the United States. And then you notice the diesel shortage. You know, they talk about, well, we're going to be short diesel on the East Coast and maybe in the Midwest coming in the summer. So there's no rationale why in the world we have a diesel shortage. What does the Ukrainian war have to do with us having a diesel shortage? Why? But what is happening, in my opinion, is just an incremental normalizing of shortages. And this will probably hit us full throttle next winter, but certainly the winter after that, wherein the absence of normal grain production will suddenly create the situation where there's just nothing to do. In other words, the amount of calories that the humans need to survive one winter to next is something that the oligarchs can calculate. And they also know pretty much what the home gardens and, of course, the national surplus and production of food indicates. So they can figure out where they have to take it. And then they can just wash their hands of the problem. They can go, gee, you know, farm production was bad. What do you expect government to do? You know, tighten your belts. So this is, I think, what we have to look forward to, Tim, is, you know, energy obviously is one area of that they'll make dramatic reductions in. Food, of course. I think the currency is going to lose its purchasing power. And on the vaccine side, I think you're going to see a real ratcheting up of, you know, a kind of a bioweapon coronavirus. I would recommend people listen to Hert van der Bosch. You know, he's criticized often, but man, he has been accurate in terms of predicting what the what would happen in terms of the virus. He was the one who was saying that there would be increased variants. He was saying this about a year ago. And what was fascinating to me is he also was very correct in saying that we would get to a point, which is where we are now, where we've come down, but we cannot clear. In other words, there's been a huge reduction in what they claim is the, you know, the COVID case counts and all this, but we can't get rid of it. It's still there, it's simmering. And he says that another variant could well come forward, you know, in a few months. I also think that there's a bioweapon aspect to this. I mean, they know perfectly well what, you know, is inside the molecular structure of these things. They've been studying this for years. So I think something nasty would be coming our way, and it would hit us at the time when we would be the most vulnerable. You know, when there is a food shortage that really can't be solved, when the energy crisis cannot be solved. You know, there's just nothing anyone can do. The nuclear power plants are gone. You know, the wheat silos are empty. Government can do nothing. And it's, you know, it's just basically a zombie apocalypse. So this is a great time for a little preparation.
Yeah, the Archbishop Vergano wrote an article regarding this abortion issue as a distraction. This isn't to say that it's not an important issue, but yeah, it is a distraction from other things that are going on, that raises the question of the timing of it. And he wrote, in recent days, the media has leaked the news that according to a draft obtained from the Supreme Court of the United States, the justices of the court are about to declare that the Roe versus Wade decision of January 22nd, 1973 is unconstitutional and must be overruled. First of all, a widespread misunderstanding needs to be clarified. This potential decision of the Supreme Court does not address the moral legitimacy of abortion, but rather whether the 1973 decision conforms to the Constitution of the United States with respect to the sovereignty of the individual states. That's something the media is not talking about. It is not therefore addressing the ethical or moral questions with regard to the legitimacy of abortion, but rather a question of jurisdiction of the Supreme Court under the Constitution. The wound that Roe v. Wade decision inflicted on the sovereignty of the states of the Union is a constitutional matter, and the justices will have to make a ruling on it as such. Now, of course, he's not an American, but he's a better understanding of constitutional law in our system than most Americans do. He also continues to write, is it significant that this is where I get, this is an interesting point he makes, and I agree with him. Vagana writes, it is significant that this aspect of the decision has been deliberately not spoken about by the media, emphasizing instead the specific content of the decision and making it an ideological banner. It's also clear that this propaganda operation maliciously conducted by the deep state has the purpose of radicalizing the debate that the news will stir up in the public opinion, with the intention of influencing the motivations of the decision, which has yet to be finalized by the justices. It does not escape anyone's notice that the premature leak of the draft of the decision has provoked violent protest demonstrations organized by pro-abortion groups and Antifa, while at the same time, the scandalous provocations and sacrilegious attacks on Catholic churches during the services are multiplying. Thus, while Americans have yet to fully comprehend the scandal, they're emerging, that are emerging about the criminal management of the pseudo-pandemic and the imposition of an experimental treatment that irreversibly modifies the human genome with still unknown long-term damage and serious side effects that have been culpably concealed by the pharmaceutical and multinationals and control agencies, while Special Counsel John Durham is preparing to conclude the investigation into Russiagate, which will soon see Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Biden, whose accomplices include members of the highest levels of the Italian government at the time, investigated for their role in the suppression of Trump's presidential campaign and hopefully condemned for high treason attacking the institutions of government, while Joe Biden desperately seeks to cover up the case of corruption involving his son Hunter in Ukraine, which disturbingly includes his involvement in the bio laboratories located there, in which research on the gain of function was carried out by the SARS-CoV-2 virus, altering its pathogenesis and its transmissibility. While the United States desperately seeks to blame the problems in the U.S. economy of inflation and rising prices of raw materials on the Russian-Ukrainian crisis, while NATO acts as an arms salesman in the service of American lobby and tries to impede the peace negotiations between Putin and Zelensky at all costs, behold, the operation is ready with which to distract public opinion and radicalize the clash between pro-life and pro-choice. After having successfully experimented the same method, mass manipulation during the pandemic farce, and even earlier with the George Floyd case and the exasperation provoked by the Black Lives Matter movement. So I think,
that's amazing. I hadn't read that.
Yeah.
And what can I say other than I am proud to be on the same page with Bishop Vagano. He's a very clear-minded guy. Yeah. The only problem is he just said it so much better than I did.
Well, I mean, you know, he was writing it, so, you know. Okay. Yeah, he goes, I am certain that Americans would not allow themselves either to be sidetracked by this operation by mass distraction or to be provoked by a pro-abortion protest that have been deliberately incited in order to foment clashes and violent reactions. Let us not forget that those who propagandize the killing of children are equally supportive of euthanasia, LGBTQ ideology, gender theory, the Great Reset, the pandemic farce, and the use of the Russian-Ukrainian crisis to weaken the nations of Europe and cover up the crimes of the deep state. So keep your eye on the ball, right? So there you go. I thought that was worth saying.
Yeah, no, well said by Vagano. He alluded to the idea that the genome is changed. This is something that is actually suggested, but at least to my mind, it hasn't really been settled. But it certainly could well be correct. And I would recommend people who are interested in getting further into the science, read Kevin McKiernan's latest paper, Differences in Vaccine and SARS Corona 2 Replicant mRNA Derivatives. What he does is he shows that there's a big difference between the spike protein that nature created and the one that comes in the vaccine, and that this difference has the potential to really be catastrophic. I won't get into the science because I just think it, without some background, it wouldn't mean much to anybody, but just in general, what he points out is that the pseudo spike protein is to create it, to keep it defended in the body so it has the time to create 30 trillion spike proteins. it is protected by this in a number of ways, but one of them will basically changes the spike proteins, its codon, which, so in other words, there are four letters that are used by the body to, you know, create proteins. And anyway, when you chart fiddling around with this stuff, he points out that it is well known that you can create errors in the coding of the human body, and that these errors have the capacity to replicate and to transmit and to go forward and to change everything in the body. Now, this is just so horrifying, it's almost unspeakable, but basically this would be what mad cow disease would look like. And it takes quite a while to develop because it can take, you know, years for this replication to get up to a volume in which you start seeing fatalities, though it could also occur very quickly depending on just the luck of the draw that you people have with the vaccine. Anyway, McKiernan just says that this is, you know, we just have to, it's just critical that there was research done in this area to see if in fact the vaccines are causing this. We just have to know. And he points out that it's incredible that the vaccine makers wouldn't have done some research into this problem, because it's just absolutely well known that if you're going to use pseudouridine, this protector of RNA, that this is in fact a possibility. And you know, there's just so many bad things about the vaccine that McKiernan points out that I'll just suggest people read it. And why this makes poignant sense today is because then I sent you a link to Joel Smalley's latest analysis of all causes death. And he points out that in every one of the 50 states, there is now visible statistics of the signal. In other words, in every one of the 50 states, you can see that once the vaccine was rolled out, that the longstanding death statistics took an uptick, a dramatic once in hundreds of years kind of uptick, and it's in all 50 states. So McKiernan's paper is just, you know, creates a context to look at Smalley's data and go, you know, there's really a terrible situation occurring. And of course, Roe v. Wade, the leak was, you know, in my opinion, just the distraction in the same way that Vagana points out, Floyd George was the distraction to the lockdown.
Yeah, just create a pretext for more protesting. And who knows, I'm sure in the spring there'll be another police shooting or something they can use as a pretext.
Yeah, they just recycle everything.
Yeah, because any given day, any weekend, there's probably an incident. Although I was looking at the numbers, I think in 2021, there are out of, I don't know how many arrests, six black men shot by police. I think 36 police were killed in line of duty, and 8,000 blacks killed other blacks.
Chicago, they had they set a new, you know, kind of a cultural standard. They had two mass shootings in one day.
Yeah.
And so you can see the, you know, the movement of the city into, I mean, what can you call it other than barbarism? Lori Lightfoot, she's not too concerned about the murder. She said that she looked at the Roe v. Wade decision or rejection as a call to arms.
Yes, that's an insurrection, right? Same with Senator Elizabeth Warren, right? Didn't Elizabeth Warren say,
this is a call to arms?
Yes.
Now, it's great, isn't it, when your mayor is supporting arming yourself in protest?
And well, then, I'm sure, as a lesbian, she's concerned about childbearing.
Well, what she said is, they have an interesting, kind of mind control statement, because it's everywhere now. It's that almost everyone brings this out. They say that, well, they're going to come after the LGBTQIA plus community. Because they've gotten rid of the road. Now they're coming after
us. What does coming after them mean? I mean, not giving to every indulge or every whim and demand?
It doesn't mean anything. It's just, it means that they are, the people who would react to that are in the thrall. In other words, Their minds have been formed in such a way that they can be stimulated in the wrong direction anytime that the oligarchs need.
And they're encouraged by the media, meaning they're oppressed, even though they're the ones harassing and rioting. They're the oppressed group. That's that. They're the, whenever you have a language of oppressed and oppressor, obviously the moral high ground is by the official oppressed. So we always look at these issues this way, with gay rights, civil rights, as if there aren't two sides or multifaceted, dimension to these issues that have to be considered before you advocate a particular piece of legislation or create a new right in the Constitution, whether, emanating from penumbras and emanations, whatever the Supreme Court does, like did with Griswold. A good sign of that was Joe Biden mumbled something after the leak report. Of course, he didn't condemn the leak. He started philosophizing to the extent that he can about abortion or what it means, the rights. And he was there saying something about Griswold v. Connecticut. I suppose this could be overturned. Well, it should be overturned. It's bad law. I mean, but nevertheless, it's not a question whether or not, you should be able to use contraceptives or not, whether it's to be sold or not, whether it's a right, whatever. And he starts talking about, what's next? Is the Supreme Court going to say that it's okay for schools to exclude LGBTQ plus children? It's like, well, wait a second. What do you mean by, first of all, since when are children labeled gay, lesbian, transgendered? Who's labeling children that? Who's sexualized children to the point where now children are identifying or being told they're lesbian, gay, or transgendered, or plus, Q, whatever? The fact that that's even a category being applied to children by the people in schools is becoming an issue, means that the children are being preyed upon. The fact that you would even say that children, there's something, a category for, for second graders or third graders, a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old to call them that is abuse. It just shows you just how twisted the thinking is on this. Well, no, maybe if a school system doesn't want the gay agenda being promoted in schools and the curriculum or in the classrooms, they shouldn't be saying things. And if they're acting up in a way that disrupts the class or upsets the values of those who the school system is supposed to serve, i.e. the parents and the taxpayers, they should be excluded then. That there is decorum. We do have a responsibility to behave in public in a certain way. The problem with these people is they think when someone opposes them politically, they say their rights are being violated and are outraged, and they can go riot, and that's been sort of the approach since the 1960s. And he also said, Biden said, the most radical group out there, extreme group, is this MAGA organization. First of all, there is no MAGA organization. He's talking about, I guess, right of center Trump supporters, conservatives. Second of all, really, are they more violent than, say, I don't know, the Students for a Democratic Society or the Weather Underground? Or I don't know, the Black Panthers, or I don't know, Antifa or Black Lives Matter. I was like, what are you talking about? Or what was that Jewish terrorist group that put a bomb in, that blew up a bomb outside Senator Byrd's office that Gerald Nader eventually got Clinton to pardon because the terrorists happened to be Jews, to be a Jewish lady who now was serving on the board for Black Lives Matter years later, So it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
And let me tell you, the inner city blacks that are distracted by the George Floyd, too, because I can absolutely warrant that another one will be coming. It is, as I see the propaganda moving forward, they will, as you move into the hunger phase, you're going to have more distraction, really intense distraction. And so you could easily imagine a George Floyd 2, 3.
Yeah, it's not going to be based on the merits of a particular case. It's whether or not, do they want to create a summer of rioting with Biden in the White House? Right?
Yeah.
That's it, right?
And they wouldn't, if it was just a political question, of course. But when they get into the winter where there starts to be shortages of food, I think that's when they really will ramp up the propaganda.
And
they'll do it because they want, basically, they want to reduce population. And there's nothing better than a civil war to do it. And so you put hunger and you mix into that, and, you know, George Floyd 2, 3, and 4. And what is the inner city going to do relative to the suburbs?
Yeah, burn. So I'm going to let me close out this meeting and then I'll start the second one. Okay.
Will do. I'll sign back in.
Okay.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay, good. Okay, we're back. Did you let me move this out of the way here? Hey, did you there was this Jewish organization claim that restricting abortion violated their First Amendment right for freedom of religion?
Really?
Yeah, it's Jewish organizations say restricting abortion access would violate their religious freedoms. As the country responds to a leaked Supreme Court opinion that indicated the sitting justices are prepared to overturn Roe v. Wade, Jewish organizations say that a possible ban on abortion would violate their First Amendment rights. I think for too long, we've allowed a small group of loud voices from religious right to dictate the narrative in this country about faith and abortion. Imagine a small group of minority having disproportionate power in the United States.
It's incredible to think about, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, come on, we're a democracy, but it's simply not true. People of faith support abortion access and people of faith support compassionate health care laws. Sheila Katz, the CEO of National Council of Jewish Women, told Insider, in this case, it would be a violation of our religious freedom not to have access to abortion. Again, she is misstating the case. This isn't the case. Obviously, states will be more restricted than others. The general access to abortion in most states will be there, for better or for worse. But nevertheless, she's claiming because sexual reproductive rights or sexual freedom is part of their faith. We are proud the Jewish tradition regards abortion as essential health care. Really?
Yeah.
Really? That goes back to like the Torah?
Wasn't it in the Ten Commandments? I mean,
it's only permitting the termination of pregnancy, but even requiring it when the life of the pregnant person is in danger. Rabbi Hera Pearson said in a statement following the Supreme Court leak, restricting access to reproductive health care impedes the freedom of religion granted by the First Amendment, including a Jewish person's ability to make a decision in accordance with their religious beliefs. Well, that's an interesting argument. I mean, that's a bit more contorted than the Roe decision.
I mean, it's sophistry. It's silly. I mean, there's always competing religious. The thing is that there's always competing religious positions.
Yes.
There's no way to resolve them other than through democracy, period. This is how the system is set up. If you don't like it, if you feel like, well, my religion is, look, there's some aspects of Sharia law that have to be restrained. You know, we don't want women who are unfaithful to be beheaded, right? So there is a restraint of religion that is just implicit in democracy, and he doesn't or she doesn't mention this. It is also, you know, the rabbi talking about women's health. Now, this is an interesting question. You know, it's often brought up as sort of the most important moral position in support of abortion is women's health. Most of the state laws, though, the states that actually permit abortion do have an inclusion of, or excuse me, prohibit abortion, do have the inclusion of, well, if it directly endangers the woman's life, then that would be a separate situation.
Yes.
So they're wrong on that point. But moreover, I mean, I'd like to see some statistics on this, because I would bet that, what would you guess, 99% of the abortions that are done have nothing to do with the mother's health, other than it's just an inconvenience to have the child. I mean, what really is that number? Because I've only, I think, seen one or two articles about this, and in neither case did they really see a very high statistical number of women who were really in trouble because of some health issue and couldn't have the baby. And so this is brought up, just like the coat hanger, of course, is the other thing that's brought up. But these are just, emotional cattle prods. They don't really have much actual statistical meaning, which is in keeping with the genre, because in fact, the claims that there would be this dramatic change in, you know, women's abortion production if Roe is overturned is ridiculous. The states that would prohibit abortion under some circumstances have very few abortions that are done in them.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, you know, women would be able, I think, would still have access to morning after pills. You know, that would be kind of hard to control. And so, you know, I mean, what really, if Roe is overturned 2 years later, what is the difference statistically in terms of abortions? I think it'd be very, very small. So this isn't really an argument about numbers. It's just about the cattle prod du jour to move people into a distracted place. And I wanted to digress just a second. You know, you were talking about the how the LGBTQ, et cetera, groups, you know, see themselves as next on the chopping block. You know, I have given my position on this so many times, and it's, but I'm going to do it one more time. They need to be told. They really do need to be directly confronted and say, look, you are very likely the victim of toxicity, which is being applied to your body as an attack. So that's one. That's the first thing that someone who wants to change their sexuality really should consider, is that this isn't just some kind of biological reality that they were born with, that the plastic in their body, which mimics estrogen, the toxicity that reduces sperm, all of these things, these damaging elements of the environment to the body are in play in your mind. And so have you really addressed that? Have you really tried to address your problems through trying to change your biological health? And then beyond that, this group should really be pointed out. I mean, like, where do you think this goes?
Well, that's hateful, Joe. This is hateful.
Well, I know it is. It is hateful, but the fact is, it just goes to eventually to them being subhuman sex slaves, right? This is really what they're creating with this group. If the LGBTQ think that the oligarchs are, like, you know, somehow creating a chosen people that's going to have a brilliant political future and wealth and power.
Well, they've been called Tranisaries.
Yeah,
elite Tranisaries, I mean, yeah. Because it's sort of a strategy of bio-Leninism where you empower a degenerate or a marginalized group that has all the power it has is being granted to it by a malevolent oligarchy or a ruling class that are going using him to pressure or destroy the middle class.
The dominant culture,
yeah.
The dominant European Christian culture. And then once that is done and the assault has succeeded, they will reduce them down just a few other ratchets of to pure dehumanism.
Yeah.
To subhumanism. Yeah. This is
it's only fitting that they would, I mean, why would a homosexual have any, why would a homosexual, lesbian, transgender care about abortion? Because they're not really into the reproduction game. They're kind of, the whole thing for them is sort of to, you know, almost like, why would homosexuals care about marriage when the whole point of the homosexual lifestyle was to avoid marriage, that whole thing. But it was there to destroy marriage and, you know, the wage war on the culture, corrupt the culture. So they're just there I think the interest would be they wanted to separate idea of male, female, and the reality of sex, the meaning of sex and reproduction, and the unit of, the unit of procreative element of sexuality, which is heterosexual, and it creates children. They want to get away from any attachment to, like, reality in nature, because that's how you get to this transhumanist hellhole they're trying to get. So
exactly. I mean, in other words, it's all laid out in Brave New World. You're going to end up with the state controlling the production of children, and the state, meaning the oligarchs, controlling the education. Anyone who complains is given the drug or exterminated.
Well, so, they admitted it back in the 60s that abortion was a necessary backstop to failed contraception. They knew when contraception failed, they had to have abortion, because this is all about sexual reproductive rights or sexual freedom or free love. Well, that was always a lie, because the fact you have to have contraception and abortion means there's no such thing as sexual freedom or free love, because there's always consequences to your actions. So to tell people that you can have free love was always a lie, because there's always consequences to your actions, spiritual, emotional, and physical. One thing is, sex tends to produce babies, and that baby requires care, and that baby ideally needs a mother and a father at various stages in his life, to one degree or another. But that goes against the whole, you know, idea of feminism and the idea of the sexual revolution, that you could undo all these things, that you could do away with the essential nature of male and female, which gets us back to, again, this whole thing where, you know, sexuality with Eros and Herbert Marcuse, and of course it gets us back to Ms. Katz and the Jews again.
Yeah, well, it's all just one system. It's all, yeah. I mean, no matter how you cut it or, you know, put lipstick on it, it's all just an ethnic attack, frankly. Yeah.
Abortion, you know, was ethnic warfare, yes.
It was ethnic warfare because it was.
And I'm not talking about Margaret Sanger and the blacks. I'm talking to you because she was also very dedicated to getting white people to get abortion.
She was a eugenicist. Yeah. But the point is that in not every aspect, you know, when you make the broad generalization, they will come back and say, aha, I know a woman who had a health issue, and, you know, and you would deny her this right and be her murder. You know, so they try to take it to an extreme case and ignore or refuse to respond to the plain fact that the vast general purpose of abortion, of birth control, of integration, all of these things, which on the individual case can be seen as morally wholesome, were in fact weaponized as a way to basically break down the ethnicity, the family, and then the individual. You end up with the single mom on the welfare check and the pornographic male staring at his
wife. Abortion tears asunder the whole relation between male and female, meaning ultimately, which is sexual for reproduction. The men and women complement each other. They come together and they have a child. And then that child requires care. And the man is there to support mother and child because both of them need care. And the sexual revolution upset all that. And the idea of, again, with abortion, we completely obliterate the man's rights in this thing, because abortion, women under current law, under Roe, women have a unilateral right to have an abortion. At the same time, they can make have a paternity suit and claim that the man has responsibility to raise the child if she decides to keep it. And so this is, you know, these laws were on the books long before abortion was legalized, but they didn't tear up, paternal obligation rights or paternal obligation laws when they said abortion was completely all about women and choice to her body. Obviously it isn't, because when she decides to keep the child, and which is her body, the man is responsible for, you know, at least legally responsible. A lot of them simply don't man up to it. Nevertheless, they're legally responsible. So what's that? And so, but that this tears men and women apart. You know,
that's what it's designed to do. I mean, again, they always give the sophistry. It's always well designed. It's either, you know, Eros is fun, or abortion and feminism are liberation. You know, this is liberty. This is pleasure. You know, you're standing in the way of this renaissance of the human spirit. I mean, if you let them drift the argument into the individual case, right, which is some kind of, you know, clear-cut exception to the general principle, then you're just going to lose. You're just going to be sitting there going, yeah, I want to restrict, you know, sexuality. I'm a Puritan, you know. So,
here's an example. Jane Roe, Norma McCorvey, Jane Roe, originally when that lawsuit was brought in the early 70s against the Texas law, I believe that her lawyers originally claimed that she had been raped.
Yeah.
Turns out she wasn't. It was a lie. So fraud was visited upon the court to pull on emotional heartstrings. And so this is the reality. They lie. They lie. They lie about statistics. They constantly lying and exaggerating. You know, just like they don't want to contend with the issue, with the legal argument. They're just mad and angry. Even Elizabeth Warren, she's mad and angry. Well, you're guilty about something, Elizabeth? Did something happen? Did you do something many years ago to preserve your career? You feel guilty?
all of these individual cases and kind of, you know, the sophistry, it's just a lump of nonsense. You have to ignore that. And the thing that is not being put into the national discourse is malevolence. You have to go, you know, this was an attack. This wasn't, you know, a group of people who were trying to create liberty or greater amounts of pleasure. This was an attack by a particular group against another particular group. And if you keep the argument there, then you can actually, because you're going to be dealing with reality, you might be able to convert many of the people who are listening to discussion to your side, because they really can't answer, you know, just any kind of honest description of the world that has been created through all of these, you know, enhanced freedoms and pleasures.
Well, if you did a poll.
We are in an absolute cesspool. We are losing our liberties. We are about to enter into a situation where they're going to be able to starve us. We've been taking, you know, a vaccine that has no safety data, you know, to support it into our bodies. I mean, all of these things are the result of an impotence that has been caused by all of these things that you're discussing, Tim. Every single one has been used against us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you want to fight back, you have to fight back on the broad stroke. You have to go, look, not against pleasure. I'm not even against abortion under some circumstances. I don't know the theoretical, you know, extent. Some of the questions concerning abortions are unanswerable. You know, democracy will have to deal with that. But these aren't really.
Well, they say it's not, you don't know when life begins. Well, when you say that you create abortion on demand, you're saying when life begins.
Yes, we know when it ends.
You already know when it ends. It ends at abortion. Yeah. You know, so I'm thinking, wait a second, you're making that, you know, you're saying, you know, isn't until the baby actually is, comes out of the mother. That's basically what the current law is. You know,
the logic of the abortionists, I mean, I'll digress and just say it is in contradiction, because they say, well, you don't really know where life begins. Well, right, neither do you.
And so, error on the side of caution then?
Because it is an open question, like as you've admitted. So please don't apply the person who is going to end the existence of the being or whatever.
Well, the fact you have to kill something suggests that there's life.
Not them to demonstrate.
The fact that you have to kill something suggests that there's life.
Yes, of course. So anyway, it's just, you know, just clever arguments.
Well, you get in the politics, the polling of it, most people would agree with Samuel Alito's position of getting back to states and regulating it with, I know I have my views on it, but most people don't understand what abortion law is. Most people think there's restrictions that you couldn't do past the first trimester. Well, no, actually under Roe and Doe versus B. Bolton, it was completely unrestricted. You get up until the ninth month in most states. And only recently, up in the past, 15, 20 years, you had laws, banning partial birth abortion, which, by the way, the abortion pro-abortion group is against too, laws prohibiting infanticide. And some states have actually legalized, like California and New York, and they've celebrated it. But it is a lump of nonsense. It's ridiculous, but that's what you get. Speaking of other nonsense, you hear Janet Yellen, our esteemed Treasury Secretary, former head of the Federal Reserve, said that banning abortion would be very damaging to the U.S. economy, because apparently access to abortion has allowed women to pursue careers, enter the labor force, and has increased the labor market productivity of the U.S. economy. So apparently our economic growth requires child sacrifice, and Moloch is ahead of our economy.
When I read that, and I really had, I'm pretty jaded, but that really, I had to break out laughing, because I thought to myself, so the Federal Reserve will announced they're going to stimulate the economy next month by lowering interest rates and increasing the number of abortions.
I guess there's no economic. What's the loss of, 60 million lives? What's the what's the human capital loss there? I mean, geez.
Again,
not to mention the coarsening it's had on the culture and relationships. And yeah. I mean, she.
But Yellen, I was glad she made it, because again, diminishing returns. I think we're there. This is clown world material. Anyone who's even on the fence about this is going to scratch their head and wonder, what in the hell is going on? Why would this you know, why would someone who's inside the government make such a statement?
She even said it improved children's lives. She actually said that.
Yeah, of course. Other than
because the ones that survive, ones that are lucky enough not to be aborted, have better material lives, apparently.
Well, it's a better economic situation for them, you know. So yeah, so it's just ridiculous. She's, you know, I mean, there really isn't any reason to try to, you know, interact.
How about the idea that the promotion and access to contraception and abortion, not to mention the culture that supports, you know, sexual licentiousness, actually has changed people's behavior. So if you didn't have these things that made sex, illicit sex to have, that people would behave more responsibly and morally, and you'd have a more orderly, peaceful society, stable families. I mean, look at, if you look at a group from a standpoint of sexual liberation, no group is more sexually liberated than Blacks, right?
Sure.
And they have 80% illegitimacy. So they must be they must be the happiest people around.
When you trace the misery index with their out of wedlock births, it's an exact statistical parallel. The more out of wedlock births, the fewer marriages, the more crime, the less education. I mean, everything gets wrong. So this is the Blacks were attacked for a number of reasons. We've talked about it many times, and now they're really an advertisement for the end of abortion and the end of even birth control, let alone kind of the licensed and lifestyle, because they've descended into chaos. They had been on the uptick since, certainly from the end of World War II, but really even from the end of World War I, they've been on the uptick and on all aspects. And because I'm so old, I was actually able to see the tail end of that. And it was just incredible in my life to see the turnaround, because, so many people have grown up with the idea that the inner city is just a hellhole. There's nothing. It's like South Chicago, and there's no intellectual power in these people. There's no political power other than weapons. And it's just this hellhole. This wasn't where we were in the 50s, the 1950s. It just wasn't like this. So, this says they are where they want to take European culture. And this is, as the inner cities and the African-Americans within the inner cities, as they exist today, these are just warning signs for everyone, even particularly for themselves. So, interestingly, Jan Psaki, I think is her name, the press spokesperson for Biden is leaving.
Oh, yeah.
And he's being replaced by a Black woman who's a lesbian.
That's very important.
And in fact, that was really brought out as, I guess, the kind of defining qualification for the job, but amazingly well-spoken, just has beautiful diction. And I mean, it's just like a robot. I don't know where they found this being, but I don't think she's going to, I mean, I think at one point the press spokesperson had to be pretty witty because the questions were ad hoc and there was usually some, to and fro. And so they had to really be able to defend the position, but that's gone. Now it's just, they're really, I think, are just canned questions and a teleprompter at this point. So I think that this woman is just an obvious puppet, but the fact that she is a Black and a lesbian, I mean, this just tells you where we are in terms of, our political class. They're trying to everything they can to push us away from, the things that they attacked with the authoritarian personality. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get us any kind of male authority, any kind of ethnic pride. They have to be just completely done away with. So this is, it's the world we live in. They're going to accelerate going into the dark winter, whenever that will emerge, either next or the one after. But, I just see everywhere I can see the Europeans especially are just their backbone is getting stiffened. I'll just give you some statistics. So 20% didn't take the vax in the United States of the adults. Another 11% only had one dose.
Yeah.
And then 5% of the kids. So you're really at about 40 some percent who are not really vaccinated. And then from there, it really tails off. You didn't get almost any subscription whatsoever into this booster business. So the public is developing a spine. And in fact, they're getting the polling data shows they're getting more and more skeptical because they can see that the vax doesn't work and they can start to see the side effects are becoming visible. My point is, they didn't wipe us out. This is obviously a body blow, but nevertheless, we survived. There is a huge cohort that is now, I think, should be able to organize, should be pretty easy. And because we, you know, what they are and who they are attacking has just never been as visible as it is now. And it has never been as defined clearly to the public as it is right now by the independent media.
Yeah, I think it's clearer now that the, at least the political class, have nothing but contempt and are trying to destroy the country. This week, the House passed a $40 billion aid package amid an economic collapse to prolong a war in Ukraine, which is the pretext for an economic collapse. $40 billion that they're borrowing. Apparently, they went to the Senate. It's being held up by Rand Paul. He's demanding that there be an inspector general, office created within this package to see where the money is going. And that's stopping it in the Senate so far. But I don't know if one senator can hold it back. 57 Republicans voted against it. I think the first aid package, only 8 voted against it. I think this the running tally is up over $54 billion. They expect it to go maybe to $90 billion by the end of the summer to prolong this war in the Ukraine. That's something that the United States could have easily prevented with a simple matter of diplomacy, because the Russian position, as we've stated several times on the show, it was perfectly reasonable. Ukrainian neutrality, no more NATO expansion. No, that was ridiculous. Even though the U.S. told Zelensky that they weren't going to bring Ukraine into NATO anytime soon, he was instructed not to tell the Russians that. So NATO was looking for a pretext for a conflict, and they got it. And of course, then Biden announced all these economic sanctions to further shut down international trade, supply chains. Then I think in April or late March, he announced to expect food shortages. And lo and behold, we have food shortages now. Baby thing, other things. Although there are hoarding and supplying, there's ample supplies for illegals coming into the country on the southern border.
Incidentally, Tim, the illegals have a surplus of baby formula.
Yes, but Americans can't get it.
We can't get it. Biden put it out that it was the moral thing to do. That's how he characterized it.
What was interesting, and Tucker Carlson pointed that out, is when Biden made that address, I think he was visiting Europe at the time, said that they were working to disseminate food shortages. They were working to create food shortages.
Right.
Is that no one in the press really talked about that? Now, in the past, if a sitting president would say, I'm going to implement policies that are going to create food shortages, which create a very volatile political climate. Historically, it always has. Bread riots have always, precipitated revolutions, always been a cause of revolutions. You want a revolution, precipitate a bread riot, a shortage of food. And he is intentionally doing this. And we mentioned the diesel fuel shortage, price of gasoline. They're doing everything they can. They're suspending or canceling leases on oil exploitation. There's all types of regulations they've implemented through executive orders, exploiting vague legislation that the Congress passed over the years to more or less implement the Green New Deal. Basically try to create a zero carbon economy. Of course, that's impossible. The only way you do that is through mass starvation and genocide, the depopulation. And something that the American people have to get through their thick skulls is, this isn't a flaw of the system. This isn't stupid liberals. Now, Biden, dementia, doesn't know what he's doing, probably doesn't know where he is most of the time. He's just a walking corpse. It's weakened at Bernie's in the White House. Is that this isn't a flaw, it's a feature of the system. And so you have to look at this holistically. They want to make you miserable. They want to make you, they want shortages to exist. So it's almost, you have to look at politics used to be, know, as Tip O'Neill said, all politics is local, and politics is about to bring, you know, you deliver the goods, make things good, a chicken in every pot, a car in every driveway, these things. Now it's the exact opposite. And they seem to be dedicated to creating one crisis after another, putting more strain in the economy, running up the debt. And where do they get $40 billion to spend? Of course, that $40 billion, it's not going to end up in the Ukraine. It's going to end up with the defense contractors. There's probably all types of programs, probably like all types of aid programs that the Nancy Pelosi's son-in-law works and is getting millions of dollars. It's just basically it's looting, because right now what they're doing is they're passing these bills and they're getting, you know, they're just trying to skim off the last bit of wealth from the U.S. economy before it collapses. And
this is Keynesian economics, basically, on Prozac. Newsom has proposed an $18 billion relief package to offset inflation.
Okay.
I mean, it's almost impossible to make this up, but there it is. So in California, you're going to have $18 billion just invented, because remember, you know, where would we come up with that kind of money?
Yeah.
So he can create debt out of thin air, and, you know, that can be bought by the banks with money they create, and there you have it. But just as an example of how this would all work, you're going to have like almost $500 million to halt the diesel sales tax for 12 months. So in other words, in California, you could buy your diesel without sales tax because the state would invent the money, which it then would pay to itself so that then the trucks would be able to continue to operate. Now that's all well and good, but
there's no diesel.
There isn't any diesel. And with another $18 billion just invented out of thin air, you have the possibility that it's going to be harder and harder to exchange dollars for real goods like diesel and oil and things. So, I mean, it's just a, it's sort of the end of the empire kind of maneuver. Newsom will just try to buy his way into another few terms. It'll be easy enough to do because California, democracy is literally dead at this point. There's just a mechanical control over the majority of the population vis-a-vis, you know, the Democratic Party. And that can only change if you get into, existential dilemmas like starvation. So when you get there, if you get that far, you're already past the point where you can really, you know, reverse things through, you know, the ballot box. I would just say, just to underline my prior comments, that what we will have, in my opinion, is you'll have George Floyd 2, 3, and 4, and more dramatic. I mean, you know, they'll be just spectacular. Kind of violence against Black males or Latino males by white police officers, and that this will be timed to go off at exactly the point when the 7-Elevens run out of Slurpees, because then you'll see that, then the violence against the suburbs will be, highly fueled by both hunger and rage. I think this is the plan going forward, is to try to have us slaughter one another. You know, I've seen and maintained this for years, that this is what they would hope would happen. And this is, I think, what they're kind of maneuvering us to do here.
Yeah. There was to close it out here, there was an interesting exchange. This is the type of oversight, or at least questioning, that some of these goons at the various alphabet soup departments that come and testify for Congress should get every time. Rand Paul was grilling Alejandro Mayorkas, our esteemed head of the Department of Homeland Security. And they're talking about this Disinformation Governance Board, the DGB, as they call it, right? Yeah. Let me see if I can play that here. That was interesting, because this is how they should be treated. And if we had a serious Congress, at least halfway serious Congress, and representatives of that actually had some sense of obligation to the American people, you'd get more of this. And so let me see if I can play this, so you can hear this.
Do we have policies? Do we have guardrails? Do we have standards? But here's the problem.
We can't even agree. We can't even agree what disinformation is. You can't even agree that it was disinformation, that the Russians fed information to the Steele dossier. If you can't agree to that, how are we ever going to come to an agreement on what is disinformation so you can police it on social media? I think you've got no idea what disinformation is, and I don't think the government's capable of it. Do you know who the greatest propagator of disinformation in the history of the world is? The U.S. government. Are you familiar with McNamara, the Pentagon Papers? Are you familiar with George W. Bush and the weapons of mass destruction? Are you familiar with Iran-Contra? I mean, think of all the debates and disputes we've had over the last 50 years in our country. We work them out by debating them. We don't work them out by the government being the arbiter. I don't want guardrails. I want you to have nothing to do with speech. You think we can't determine, you know, speech by traffickers is disinformation? You think the American people are so stupid they need you to tell them what the truth is? You can't even admit what the truth is with the Steele dossier. I don't trust government to figure out what the truth is. Yeah. Government is largely disseminating disinformation.
Yeah, well said. I mean,
that's the type of grilling they all should get when they go up there, you know, and not, then maybe with an indictment for perjury after they leave, because they always lie through their teeth when they're up there.
Well, that was good because that would put a spine in the citizen. I mean, when they heard that, then they would have, you know, vocabulary and grammar to be able to use when they were, you know, confronted with this issue. I mean, the American people just cannot accept the office of disinformation. We have to stop that.
Yeah.
Period. I mean, anyone who you know, tries to apply this as, you know, either a political or a moral force really needs, you know, extreme prejudice.
Nina, what's her name?
Jankowicz.
Nina Jankowicz should just be relegated to like a, I don't know, like a dinner theater or something. She can sing.
Yeah, great singing voice. I was amazed at how professional she came across, but she's just a creature from the clown world. I think that, I'm not that worried about it. I really think that this is, I mean, the people who will respond to that, the extreme GBTLQ and then the lesbian, they are so far in the thrall of this political propaganda world that they don't need any prompting. They don't need to be told anything, you know, about who is bad, who's making bad statements. And as far as like, you know, deleting tweets or putting in fact checks, I mean, look at how impotent that was relative to the vaccine. Mm-hmm. I mean, the vaccine was supported by all of the shill scientists. They had hundreds of them. I mean, they really were organized in this. They had all kinds of shills. They had the whole media sitting there, safe and effective, and they absolutely lost the issue. I mean, the statistics are just clear as a bell. They absolutely lost this issue, and it's getting worse at every day. So they think they can turn that around with the Office of Disinformation. She's just going to be talking to herself. I think that, you know, it's the rock and the hard place for the oligarchs, Tim, because they can get rid of the internet, but then they don't have the tool to control. I mean, how would they even, for example, have run the pandemic without, you know, the internet to frighten people? But if they keep it up, then the independent media will simply swallow them, because, you know, when we have truth and reason and we're not afraid to debate and we want to have, you know, like open discussions, the more open, the better. People catch on to that. They can see the truth in all this. It's transparent. You know, their problem, Tim, is that they are trying to create excuses for lying. And yeah, they're clever excuses, but people can see they're lying. So, you know, I mean, it's just not going to work. The only thing they can do really is shut down the internet.
Okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, we'll hopefully if the internet's up, we'll talk next week.
Take it easy. Enjoy the weekend. All right.